Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
Welcome to another exciting edition of Listen In with KNN, as we are glad to be back, sports fans, because yes, this week in sports was just another crazy, hectic time, but we've got you covered right here on Fox Sports Radio, 96.9 FM and 1340 AM. As always, with me, your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson, joined, as always, by the general, the one and only, my co-host, Ray Jones. Ray, what's up with you?
Hey, what's up, Kelsey? How you doing?
I am great. I am all set to get in today's show. We have another power-packed show today with a fabulous guest, because on today's show, we will be welcoming in a name that those in the boxing world should know very well. We'll be welcoming in Tony Bellew, the BBC box sporting analyst, and also, if you are a Creed fan, you'll also know he was also a Creed star. Yes, starring next to your favorites. And with that, it means it's time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in and follow along, as always, with the conversation on social media using hashtag ListenInWithKNN. And with that, I'll give it over to my co-host, Ray Jones, to start us off with this week in sports history.
All right, Kelsey, for this week in sports history, I chose the date of April 12, 1858. It was the very first U.S. Billiards Championship. For those that are popular and familiar with the game of pool, billiards is the professional game. Back in 1858, Michael J. Phelan won his first championship in Detroit, Michigan. So took it way back in the time machine in 1858. Kelsey, what do you have for our sports history today?
Yeah, I still feel bad. I still have not played billiards yet, but I will learn one day, Ray. But I am going to April 10th, 1913, so also taking it way back. And I'm going back to the time when President Woodrow Wilson threw out the first ball as the Senators beat the Yankees 2-1. And Ray just brought up some great memories. And I just have to ask you, right now I'm putting you on the spot with this one, but give me, who do you think threw the worst ball ever, the worst first pitch that you've seen personally or seen on social media?
If I remember correctly, I think it was Carl Lewis had a pretty, didn't he have a pretty bad throw, or was he the national anthem? I can't remember.
That was national anthem.
Okay.
But hey, well, the badness runs in sports.
Well, a recent memory, I'm going to say 50 Cent had a pretty bad throw. His was pretty bad. I'm not sure if he might be considered the worst, but a couple years ago, I think he was at a Mets game. He threw the first pitch out, and he went straight
yes,
into the dirt.
I remember that. And those are ones you can't live down. And it's funny, I pulled a list up that Bleacher Report actually did. And since it's Dirk's actually his last run, as we say, in the NBA, he actually was known to throw a bad one, even former President Barack Obama. So I want the fans to tweet us. Give us who threw the worst first pitch ever in history using hashtag listening with KNN, but that's just always a fun conversation, right? But it's on my list. One day I want to do it, and I will do us well, right? I will represent us well, hopefully, if I get the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so with that gives us our week in sports history. As always, we're going to go to a quick commercial break, and we will be right back with our very, very highly anticipated guest, the one and only Tony Bellew. Stay tuned for more.
Advertisement and sponsorship opportunities are now available for Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio, WHAP. Become a part of the hottest new sports talk show in the nation's capital, fueled by one of the largest national sports radio networks. Hosted by award-winning sports personality Kelsey Nicole Nelson, Listen In with KNN brings listeners the latest trending topics in sports and in entertainment each week. So if you're looking to maximize your brand's exposure alongside the best local and national sports coverage, plus special live editions of Listen In with KNN from venues around the region, email Kelsey at kelseynelson@foxsports1340am.com. For more information about Listen In with KNN, visit foxsports1340am.com.
Welcome back to Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district and beyond, right here on Fox Sports Radio, 96.9 FM and 1340 AM, where it is now my honor and pleasure to welcome in, from the great city of Liverpool, the European capital of culture, current BBC Sports boxing analyst and former WBC cruiserweight champion, a Creed star and lifelong Evertonian, the fighting pride of Merseyside, the one and only Tony the Bomber Bellew. Tony, how are you today?
I'm okay, guys. How are you guys doing?
We are wonderful. It's an honor to have you. I have to say, every time someone gets on with an accent, I'm a little jealous because I just talk normal, I guess. But it's always nice to welcome you on. How's everything been going with you?
I'm okay, you know, happily retired now from boxing, but not retired from life. I'm still very busy and caught up in a lot of different things. So we're just making the most of the time that I have now.
Yeah, I'm sure it's completely different, extremely different. Let me just ask you real quick. Was it hard after retiring to not get used to being in the ring all the time? I mean, how has that transition been for you?
Yeah, I've been fighting for 20 years, so it wasn't hard to give it up. I've been fighting for longer than I have not been. So, like I say, you know, it wasn't hard to give up in the end. My body just couldn't do it anymore. And there's only so much, so many times you can go to the well. And, you know, I want to perform at the highest stage. I went out on the highest level, on the biggest possible stage. Didn't finish off the way I'd like to. But I'm very happy with my career on a whole, with things I've done, places I've been, people I've met, things I've experienced. It's been a fantastic trip, a fantastic journey.
Good. And I can definitely tell from your answer, just, I mean, your journey's been incredible and we've been so excited to be along for the ride and have you let us into your life. And now let me ask you firstly, Tony, I mean, you're currently a professional boxing analyst for BBC Sports. So can you talk a little bit about this exciting new venture for you since in your professional life, since you retired from the ring back in October of 2018?
I do a number of things. I work, I'm an analyst for Sky Sports Boxing. I'm a panelist for the BBC. I'm a chief ambassador, a global ambassador for Sport Pisa. I've only just come back from Africa last week doing some charity work out there and helping with a boxing promotion and, you know, putting on a world championship title fight. So I'm doing a number of different things. You know, I also have a big property portfolio. I look after, I think you guys call it real estate over there. So I have quite a bit of that I have to look after. So, you know, I was wise with what I earned in the boxing fraternity and I turned it over into real estate and made it work for me. So, you know, I'm still busy, extremely busy day to day. And like I said, you know, I still love being in and amongst the boxing. I look after a couple of fighters. I'm the manager for them. I don't do that for any financial gains. I do that just to help them. And keep them away from the pitfalls that I fell down in my career at certain stages. So, like I say, I'm extremely busy, but I'm enjoying it now. You know, I get to spend a lot more time with my family and spend a lot more time at home. And I'm going to make it work for me.
Wonderful. And obviously, I know that's very important to you because you've actually gone on record about longing for more normality in your life and career. And I can tell that you have that now. And Tony, throughout your successful professional boxing career, you, of course, won numerous decorated titles. You fought in pay-per-view box office title bouts, as well as fulfilling your dream of fighting inside Goodison Park, home of the beloved Everton. And with that being said, what are your top three personal greatest moments throughout your professional boxing career? Give me your top three.
The top three, I would say the first one would obviously, you know, me greatest moment was Goodison Park without a shadow, without lifting that WBC Cruiserweight Championship of the World, a belt held by, you know, legends like Evander Holyfield. I was honoured to hold that belt and win it on that night at the best location for me. So, you know, there's nothing that comes close to that. Number two, I would say beating a fighter like Matthias Mastanac on a unanimous decision for the European title was also a great victory. And then defeating former world champion Nathan Cleverley was another great night for me. You know, I've beaten former world champions, former European champions. I've beat former heavyweight champion of the world, David Hay, not once, but twice. There's so many great nights I've had, and it's very hard to just label them and put them and say one, two, and three. So, you know, like I say, the two victories over David Hay, that was against all the odds. The whole world wrote me off and said I couldn't defeat the monster, you know, the big, dangerous former heavyweight champion of the world. So defeating David twice was a great buzz. But, like I say, just fantastic nights, fantastic memories, you know, defeating David Hay twice in his own backyard in London was massive. And being voted off by the whole world. So that was good. But once again, nothing ever touches Goodison Park.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. And obviously, you're helping us all relive all of those great moments. And now I wanted to kind of take it back earlier to your childhood, where, of course, you grew up in Liverpool. You were, of course, inspired by the inspirational Rocky movies and the people's champion, the Italian stallion, Rocky Balboa. And I just want to ask you, though, what did it mean for you personally to star in the Hollywood box office hit Creed, co-starring Michael B. Jordan and Sylvester Stallone?
It was unbelievable. You know, I thought it was a prank when he first came to me and wanted to make contact. I just couldn't believe it was happening to me. So, you know, I went over to Philadelphia. I lived there for 3 months. You know, a huge applaudit needs to go to Ryan Coogler, the director who made the movie, because if it wasn't for Ryan Coogler, I couldn't have played that part. I went into the movie. I'm a complete non-actor. I'd never had acting lessons. I'd never done anything of any kind of acting or anything of that sort. And it was Ryan Coogler who convinced me that I could do it and made me believe in myself enough to do the things that I'd done in the movie. So I just give him all the credit in the world. He's one of the best people I've ever met and ever known. You know, also directed the amazing movie Black Panther that we all seen last year.
Yeah.
So I had a great time doing Creed. Truly unbelievable. I enjoyed spending time with the likes of Sylvester Stallone and Michael B. Jordan. Great people. They helped me every single step of the way when I needed it. And we had an absolutely ball, a laugh, a good time, and we got the hard work done and made a great movie in the end.
Yeah, it's one that most of us saw. It was fantastic. And that being said, I mean, incidentally, Creed 2 also stars Sylvester Stallone and, of course, Dolph Lundgren, who are indeed both Evertonians for Madden. But I'd like to know, whose idea was it to film at Goodison Park for the first Creed movie?
I'm not going to lie, I was looking at going to Anfield, Liverpool Football Club's ground, but I refused to play the role of Pretty Ricky Conlon if it meant him being a Liverpool fan, so it ended up getting switched to Goodison Park and being and everything in the movie, so I think that one rests with me, to be honest.
Nice. Okay, we had to know, but I appreciate you letting the listeners know. And then, Tony, of course, on May 6th, you will be playing for charity in the much-awaited People's Play Celebrity Football Game for the Bradley Lowry Foundation at Goodison Park. Can you tell the audience more about this incredible charity game and, of course, your memories of Bradley, who sadly died at 6 after a long illness?
He did. He had a long battle, but he fought it all the way like a true warrior that Bradley was. A lovely boy. I met him at Goodison Park when Everton played Sunderland, and, you know, he touched everybody's heart who was there. He really, really did, and it's going to be nice to be putting these games on for Bradley, you know, in his memory and stuff like that now. But yeah, it'll be fantastic. Goodison Park is the place where it's going to be played at. And I'm looking forward to taking part. And hopefully we can raise as much as possible.
Yeah, that is so wonderful. And I commend you for being a part of that. And I hope everyone out there is able to go and watch some good football. All right, so now let's switch it over, and I want to talk to you now about, there were, of course, well-documented transitions and managerial changes at Everton last season. However, what are your overall thoughts on Everton's season so far under Marco Silva? And also, I want to ask you, do you feel Silva has taken too much unwarranted criticism for his zonal defensive setup and his tinkering?
I think it's very, very hard. He's got a squad that isn't really his at the moment, and he's trying to put his stamp on it. I think Marco's had some fantastic times this season, and he's had some very hard times this season also. So it's unfair to judge him at this moment in time. We've still got 5 or 6 games to go, and they're all big games for Everton, because if we win them 5 or 6 games, there's a possibility we can get into Europe. If we lose 3 out of them 6 games, then, you know, we're not going to be in the position that we would have liked to have been. But we've got to be realistic here. The teams that are above us have had fantastic seasons. I mean, Wolverhampton Wanderers have been remarkable, in my opinion, this season. You know, the teams who are above us are supposed to be above us, the likes of your Liverpools, your Tottenhams, your Chelseas, your Arsenals, your Manchester Uniteds, and your Manchester Cities. They're all supposed to be above us. I'm not going to lie, Wolverhampton Wanderers, I would never have anticipated they were going to finish above us this season, but it is what it is. They've had a great season. You know, we're having our eyes opened a little bit with this squad that we've got of players. It's one that Marco's inherited. So, you know, he needs a bit longer, a bit more time in the job. And then let's see how good of a manager he really is. And let's see the squad that he wants to build and make at Everton Football Club. Because I believe he is a good manager. I believe he does need a bit more time. And I believe he needs, you know, players he can acquire in the summer and strengthen his squad and make it more of his own personal squad.
Yeah, and I mean, I appreciate your candidness on that. And of course, you did talk about Everton's final six games of the Premier League season. But that being said, I mean, do you feel Everton can secure a Europa League spot by taking important points from the remaining six league games?
I would like to think so. I think it's a big ask. I think it's going to be very, very hard. But yes, it can be done. It's not mission impossible. You know, it's a matter of winning, I would say, four out of the six games. Maybe even five. You know, if we win six out of six games, we're definitely going to qualify for the Europa spot. But that's a big, big ask, especially going on recent form as well. So, of late, Everton have been okay. You know, the win over Chelsea it was a great win, great victory. So we just need to build on it now. You know, we've got a huge game tomorrow against Arsenal. That's a big, big game. And if we're going to be looking for that to them Europa spots, we need to beat Arsenal tomorrow 100%. So we can't afford a draw. We need the 3 points.
All right. And that being said, I mean, I just want to hear from you. Which Everton players in particular have impressed you the most? And do you think the team is starting to gel at this stage in the season?
There's been a couple of standouts this season. I mean, you can't look past Richarlison, to be fair. He's been fantastic all season. Couple of injuries, a couple of suspensions here and there. That's tough when a player of his quality goes missing. Gylfi Sigurdsson has impressed me this season. I thought he was finding his feet last season a little bit, but he's been so much better this season. You know, a lot of goals, a lot of assists. He's been fantastic. Lucas Digne has been very, very good his first season in the Premier League, and, you know, he's been fantastic. Bernard has impressed me at times. Andre Gomez has been good, very, very good at times. So there is, you know, reason to be looking forward and not backwards. There is some good players there, and there is, you know, we've got some great talisman, as I say, in the likes of Gylfi Sigurdsson and Richarlison. You know, you're not a Brazilian international for nothing. You know, he's an outstanding player with a lot of ability, and hopefully he can kick.
And now, Tony, I want to go back to your growing up. And one thing that you've often said, that this should be no stranger to any of your fans, is that you've often said you're a product of your environment. But I want to know, however, can you talk about in detail about your years growing up in Liverpool and just kind of how boxing kind of kept you away from dangerous situations growing up?
Boxing is what it is in Liverpool. You know, you want to be, I'd say two or three things that you're going to do. If you don't finish well in school and you don't come out with the qualifications that you need, then what you'll find in a place like Liverpool is you either want to be a footballer, and if you can't make it as a footballer because, you know, very, very small percentage can only make it to the top of the football world, then you would head towards telling jokes, which scouts are very, very good at, or, you know, the last one would be fighting, and that is either the mixed martial arts world or the boxing world. So from my neighbourhood where I'm from, there's three or four boys that have made it out without qualifications, and I was one of them. Another guy was called Kevin Tetham. He was in the UFC. Another one was called John Welsh. He was a footballer. And the fourth one was Ross Barkley. We all lived within a distance of about 400 metres of each other.
Wow.
And then out of the whole area, that's all I know of in the last 20 years of the guys who have made it out of the area where we're from. So very tough, very hard place. But at the same time, I wouldn't change it for the world. I love where I'm from. I'm very proud of where I'm from. And, you know, I have some great memories of a great childhood growing up. You know, the youth centres we went to. I wasn't a perfect kid. I was a naughty boy, as everybody is when they're in the teenage years. But I found a way out through boxing. And, you know, I literally fought my way out of where I'm from, which I'm very, very proud of.
Right, and look at you now, living, breathing example. And I love that you're an example to those in hard situations growing up. But I mean, honestly, your story is an inspiration to us all, Tony. That's why we're so excited to have you on. And one thing One thing I know that has been somewhat concerning that a lot of people are talking about, though, is the ever-rising gang culture and kind of the shady underworld throughout Liverpool and the measures which are being made to kind of ease the violence and criminal activity throughout the city. So just kind of want to hear your thoughts on kind of what's happening to kind of ease crime in Liverpool.
To be honest, it's not like it was many years ago. There used to be a hierarchy among the underworld in a place like Liverpool. You know, there would be...
Right.
There will be people who people will be afraid of. There will be gangs or cultures or people that, that people would steer clear of. In this modern day now, there is none of that. There is no respect from the youth to the elders. There is no respected criminal hierarchy amongst Liverpool anymore. There is only, it's literally every man for himself. And it's very, very sad, the situation that's going on. We've got a serious problem with knife crime. We've got a serious, serious problem with firearms. Considering that firearms are not allowed in this country in any capacity, there is an abundance of them on our streets. You know, firearms have now become as big a problem as drugs in our city. There are shootings every single week. There is stabbings every single day. It is on the news now all the time. It's just very, very sad, the thought that a young boy or a young lady feels the need that they have to go out with a knife to defend themselves. It really, really is. It's a sad situation. So I'm hoping that, you know, the police can put some kind of banning on these knives, or they can put something in place where if you're caught with a knife and you're going to do, you know, damage to somebody with that knife, you've got intent to use it, then, you know, you should be locked up for a long time. And you know, there's got to be laws put in place that stop people, or it makes it a major deterrent not to want to go out with a knife, because it's all so easy now. Everybody's carrying knives. There's an awful lot of young boys, with access to firearms. It's just a scary world we live in. You know, it really, really is. And my eldest son is 13 years old, and I'm petrified of him going to the city centre. I really, really am. So, you know, like I said, it's worrying times that the police need to get a grip of. You know, police numbers are down more than ever before. You know, people are more worried about Brexit than they are about the actual people in this country. We should be worrying more about the laws of the country and educating the youth. Because by educating the youth, you're going to make it a better lifestyle for our younger children growing up. You know, just educate these young boys and girls on the likes of crime, knife crime, gun crime. People are going out the front doors thinking that life is like Grand Theft Auto, and that they're going to make a serious mistake and hurt somebody, and they're going to push reset and the next day it's going to be okay. That's not real life. Social media has an awful lot. Social media has an awful lot to answer to this as well, in my opinion. You know, there's so many people out there. We live in a crazy, crazy world. We live in a world where there's a severe accident or somebody gets hurt, and the first thing that people want to do is pull out a phone and record the incident instead of actually just going to help the person who's being hurt. It's a crazy, crazy world we live in. It really, really is. So it's something that needs addressing. But listen, I'm not a politician, so there's no point in me rabbiting on about it, because it's not going to do anything. But these are the problems that we face all over the world. It's not just England. It's not just Liverpool. It's all around the world now. We live in an era where, like I say, it's cool to video somebody wanting to jump off a building instead of talking that person down and wanting to help that person.
That is so true, Tony. It's sad, like you said, but you see fighting videos all the time on social media. You see people getting hurt. I just saw here in America, in New York, an old lady getting beat up, and everyone was recording it, and no one thought to stop that incident on the train. So as you said, it's sad and it's scary, and there's someone who has a young sister who's in high school, who actually had a gun incident at her school. You know, it's sad, but as you said, I think it's something we all need to address, and hopefully the police all across the world can hopefully
It's the world we live in now. You know, cameras are so accessible, and people think it's cool to video something on a phone. I seen a young boy being beaten up by about 10 men last week, and another guy stand there videoing on a phone. Instead of videoing it, he just has to step in and ask these boys to stop. But I just think he's a pure coward for videoing it and not even willing to help this young boy who took an absolute beating. So, like I said, sad world we live in, but what can you do? You've got to do your bit. That's all we can do as an individual. Do your bit and help people when you can.
Right. Well said. Well said, Tony. And I do want to go back real quick to your childhood and growing up, because this is something you've spoken on before. And you've basically talked about how disciplined and how hard as nails, really, that your father was during your adolescent years. So I just want to ask you, I mean, how did this kind of tough love approach and no-nonsense attitude kind of shape you growing up?
I had very loving parents, but, you know, listen, I had a father who was extremely tough. He was a hard man. He ran Liverpool's nightlife in the city centre. He was a doorman. And he was around in a time when nobody carried knives, nobody carried guns. People had a fist fight and shook hands at the end of it. And and so, you know, that's what I looked up to growing up. And, you know, it's no coincidence why I end up getting in a ring and fighting and wanting to prove myself with just my hands, which worked out okay in the end. But like I said before, it's no coincidence why I ended up doing what I've done. I wanted to impress my father when I was growing up. You know, I come from a single parent home. My father left when I was 10 years old. And although he leaves home, he's still in a regular part of my life on a day-to-day period. So, it, like I say, it nurtured me, and I'm literally a product of my environment. I'm a kid who loves to fight, but I found a way to do it the right way and lived a great life through doing what I enjoyed doing. You know, I loved every single minute of every single fight. Even when I lost, I loved fighting still. So, I class myself as someone who's very lucky, but, you know, forget about all the fights. It took an awful lot of dedication and sacrifice to get where I got. You know, nobody, everybody sees the end result in the ring on fight night, but nobody sees the pain and torture that you put your body through for year after year, you know, training camp after training camp. Nobody sees the injuries. You know, after my first professional fight, I broke my left hand. I snapped my knuckle in half.
Wow.
Snapped two bones in my left hand, and I was sitting in a hospital bed 4 days before Christmas and never had a single penny to my name, and I was told that my career might be over. But people don't see that side of it. I say it's only four professional fights in, you've got a cast on your hand and you're getting told you may never be able to punch with that left hand again, and it's just down to pure belief, sacrifice, determination, dedication, whatever you want to call it, that I found a way to get through them hard months in the recuperation, getting me hand right again, and believing in myself that I could come back from it and that I could do something in this sport. And like I say, it worked out in the end, but it took an awful lot of self-belief, dedication, whatever you want to call it, to get to where I got to. I've been told my whole life I couldn't do it. You know, I left school, like I said, no qualifications. There was nothing else I could do when I left school besides fight. And there was someone who used to laugh at me, and I used to always say, one day I'm going to be a world champion. One day I'm going to fight at Goodison Park. Don't get me wrong, I never thought I was going to be in a Rocky movie. I never anticipated that.
But,
you know, I was telling people I was going to be a world champion. I was going to be a European champion. I was going to be this and that. Basically, I faked it until I made it. So fake it until you make it is usually a thing that you hear people say. But I literally did, because I was telling these people I was going to do it. I was going to do it. And in the end, it finally came true. And, you know, all them people who, are, like I said, were going to school, being a young man, all them people that laughed at me, the thing that I say to them now is, who's laughing now?
Yeah, and they're probably watching you now too.
I'm sure they've watched or paid to watch through Sky Box Office. But either way, I'm happy. You know, I'm a very, very happy, content person with my life, the way it's worked out. I've got a beautiful wife. I've got three beautiful children. I'm extremely happy. I couldn't have wrote it any better myself. I've had the ups. I've had the downs. But in the end, I found a way to come out on the other side. And don't let me paint as if it's a perfect picture, because it's not, because nobody's life is perfect. You know, everybody looks at the likes of Instagram and social media. You've got the nice car, the nice this, the nice that. Oh, you've got money. Money is the least important thing out of everything, because it can't buy you happiness, and it can't buy you a nice family or whatever you want. So although, you know, money is a very good thing that I can use to help people, and, you know, I don't have to worry about paying certain bills anymore, the one thing that it doesn't generate is just happiness on a whole. I've just come back from a country in Kenya. I've just come back from Nairobi in Kenya. And these children didn't even have fresh water or fresh food. And these are some of the happiest children I've ever come across in my whole life. So all they've done was smile and laugh and want to play games. And it really did open my eyes. I will never, ever think to myself that I came from a tough place again after going to Nairobi. I'll never, ever say that. So I've come from a place that's like Buckingham Palace, where the king and queen are from. You know, compared to what these young people have got in Nairobi, Kenya, it was very, very hard to see. I loved being there, spending time with them, speaking to everybody. It was fantastic. But I will never, ever believe for a minute again that I had it hard growing up. I had it easy compared to what these young boys have got and young girls.
Wow. Can I ask, Tony, what brought you over to Kenya?
I'm a global ambassador for Sport Pisa, and Sport Pisa got me over. We had WBC super bantamweight female world champion, Fatuma Zayn-Fisarika, defending her WBC title against Christina Fury. She done that. She done it magnificently well. She, you know, won a unanimous decision and was perfect on the night the way she boxed. So, yes, I was over there working with Zarika and making sure the fight went to plan and everything went great. And Sport Pizza were amazing. The way they had us over there, they looked after us fantastically, took us to places that really did open my eyes. They really did, you know, change the way my whole outlook on life. And I can't wait to go back to Africa again soon. I'm probably going to be going in July, August time to spend some time back out there. You know, we rigged out a boxing gym with all the latest equipment, because this boxing gym we went in, they were literally punching old car tires. They had no pads, they had no real punching bags. They had a ring that was 35 years old. And it was just, you know, this actual gym created a world champion in Fatuma Zarika. So it was great to go in that gym and just revitalize it. Just give them all new equipment, all new punching bags, gloves.
That's so wonderful.
Oh, it was a beautiful thing to do. It was Sport Pizza who made it happen. I was just, you know, overwhelmed to be able to hand all this equipment over as being part of Sport Pizza doing it. And it was just, like I say, phenomenal. It really, really was.
Wow, that is magnificent. Again, you continue to do great work. And Tony, just a couple more questions. One more question before we go. I want to go back to your childhood and something that is still a hot topic today, but I know you've talked about it before, but I'd like to hear you talk about it now. And this is talking about you growing up in an interracial union in Britain in the late 1980s. I just kind of want to ask you, was there any hostility or naive name-calling aimed toward either yourself or your parents because of the black and white union?
In my situation, not really. No, I mean, my father coming into the area. I'm a place called Toxteth, where my father met my mother, and that's a predominantly black area. That's where the Toxteth riots took place in 82, the year I was born. So my father coming into that area was, you know, had to fight his way in literally to see my mother, because he was white and my mother was black. I didn't really see it much. I've always asked the questions and stuff like that to my parents growing up, but you know, I was never accepted by either people, because where I came from, everybody was multicultural, mixed race people. Best friends who I went to school with, most of them are mixed race. And it was just the way it was in the area we were from. Boxing in the north end of my city, Liverpool, was a lot more predominantly white. So, you know, you'd hear the names and stuff like that, but I'd always get to beat the people up because I was boxing against these guys. We were all in the same gym together, so I enjoyed it, listening to the name calling. And then getting to give them a good hide. As times have changed and moved on, people have become more educated and realised that they're just stupid and uneducated people. I mean, I still don't understand how racism even exists as it does today. For me, I see it from both sides, being a mixed race person. But it never, ever personally got to me, because I would look at these people whenever I've seen racist people, and you do see them in your life, you know, every now and again, I would pity them. And I would just think, you are an uneducated fool. And I would say, how could you possibly determine what somebody is like through their colour, through their creed, through their religion, whatever have you? How could you possibly, you know, judge somebody on that alone? They don't choose to be this way, or they don't choose to look this way. It's just unbelievable that it still goes on to this day, you know. Like I said, growing up where we grew up was hard. You know, my youngest brother was gay and also mixed race. So he had it very tough growing up. And, you know, every fight I had as a kid was probably fighting for him and defending him. So, like I said, I come from a very multicultural background, diverse in many different things. You know, whether it's the genders and all that kind of thing. You know, like I said to you before, my young brother was gay and knew this at a young age. You know, comes from black and white parents. So you just deal with it and get on with it. You know, like I said before, I come from a city that's very tough. And in the years when you're growing up, them kind of things were unheard of. There wasn't many young gay lads around. There wasn't many mixed race people around. You learn to move on with it and get on with it. And you usually attach yourself to people who are very similar to you. And I did that growing up. But what can I say? You know, I wouldn't like to say at all we had it tough in any kind of way. All I have to do is relate and look back to what I've seen in Nairobi. And you know, we lived like kings where I'm from. We had the basic things, as much food as we needed to eat and as much clean water as we wanted. Whereas I watched a young child, 5 years old, in Nairobi did then. He walked around with a sack full of aluminium cans. Literally, the sack was bigger than him, and he was pulling it along the floor because he was trying to get some spare change from the recycling of the aluminium cans.
Wow.
To go help feed the children's system. This child was no older than 5 years old. It literally broke me heart. So it just puts things into perspective. So that's why I would say my childhood was great growing up. You have the odd fight. You look out for your own. And it is what it is. You just keep moving.
You keep moving. Like you said, we all have a lot to be thankful for. And when you say stuff like that, those true stories, it's like you really have to look at what you put into perspective and what you complain about when there's so many people living around the world that are just not well off. And so I appreciate you bringing that to the listeners. And Tony, before we leave, can you please? Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry, no, it's okay. Go on, fire away.
And I'm just going to say, before we leave, can you let the audience know how to stay up to date with you on social media and where they can keep connected with you?
They can stay connected with me through it. I'm on Twitter under Tony Bellew. I'm on Instagram under Tony Bellew. I have a website that does fantastic things. That's at bomberbellew.co.uk. I have a training plan that's being out. You know, we've done thousands and thousands of sales with the training plan. We're going to do a new edition of the training plan. So it's working out for all kinds of people. And I help people train not for, you know, not everybody's going to have a six pack and the muscles of, let's say, an Anthony Joshua.
Yeah.
My training plan isn't for that. My training plan was to help the average person out there. You know, somebody who wants to get fitter, stronger, a little bit faster, but doesn't want to live on a strict diet that's going to change your life and literally take over your life. You know, my thing was just train, you know, be happy, get a little bit fitter, get a little bit stronger. And at the same time, you know, live a normal life. If you want to take away on a Saturday night, you can go and have it. If you want to have a glass of wine once or twice a week, you can do it. And you can do all this incorporating my plan and my diet and my training strategy. So, you know, it's been very good doing that and helping people and giving back. But, you know, like I say, it's been a great time. So, you know, hopefully I can share some of my experiences and my training plan with all the other people.
That is wonderful. Well, thank you so much again, Tony, for joining us right here on Listen In with KNN. We hope to have you back.
Oh, yes, definitely. Give us a call in 12 months' time and see where we're at again.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time. I truly appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys. Speak to you soon.
Advertisement and sponsorship opportunities are now available for Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio, WHAP.
Welcome back to Listen In with KNN, where Ray, wow, I just have to say, like, having Tony Bellew on, first of all, I mean, he's still intimidating, but what a great interview. Always glad to have a champion back in the house. So great to see all of the great things he's doing after boxing. But from boxing, Ray, we have to switch over to the basketball world because it seems like everything this April has been around basketball, at least all the big headlines. And, of course, we have to pay tribute to the NCAA champions. As someone who lives and was born and bred in the DMV area, congratulations to UVA Charlottesville, right? Everybody was turning up after UVA won their first national championship. Always love those moments. And also, right, who could not love when they start playing the One Shining Moment song? With that being said, I'm sure everybody watched the game, but an overtime win for Virginia. They beat Texas Tech in an 85-77 win. That being said, Ray, give me your thoughts on this UVA team and how you thought they did in winning their first ever national championship.
I mean, you got to tip your hat to them because for them to get eliminated in the very first round, being the number one overall seed last season, and to coming back and overcoming that adversity and actually making it to the championship, even this year they faced adversity in the first round. They were down at halftime to an inferior team, and they fought back. And then all the different dramas that they faced throughout the tournament, couple of overtime victories, couple last minute buckets. They deserved it. They went through a lot. They deserved it. I think Hunter, he definitely did himself well. I think he made himself well during this tournament. He was able to shut down Jarrett Culver, who was a pretty high prospect as well. So the whole team, I think, kudos to them. Shout out to the coach. I think the coach proved himself to be a great coach. Might even have potential Hall of Fame written on his name later on in the future, but nothing more you can say. They did a great job, and kudos to the Virginia team.
Yeah, high praise, but well-deserved praise. I think UVA has always been one of those teams. We know UVA has a good basketball team, right? Their ACC basketball, we're used to them being well, but we never, not many people will ever put them in the championship category because we're so used to them having a hiccup along the way. You said DeAndre Hunter, wow, that man can play some basketball. 27 points. Of course, in the championship game, Ray, I will say my only thing I didn't like about UVA winning the championship is that I thought DeAndre Hunter should have had more interview and camera time after the game. He was pretty much the game MVP, so that was just a personal pet peeve. I feel like we really didn't get to hear him talk at all. I mean, and I think he should have. But that being said, fabulous game. I think he helped his draft stock. And then adding him along with, of course, Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome, I mean, that UVA offense, and also defensively, I think they stepped up. But their offense, I thought, it was a slow start to the game. I think we can all say that for both sides. But they got the groove going, and even though Texas Tech has a fabulous defense, and even though Texas Tech at one point led in the game, UVA was able to come back. And let me say it right, they owned that overtime. They owned that overtime. Because if you remember, I mean, UVA, they had the 10-point lead, and then they watched it turn into a 3-point deficit. But the fact that they were able to come back and just play well together and mesh well together, like you said, under their coach's leadership, I like this UVA team, right? And I'm glad at the end of the day that they are the team that remains victorious. So congrats to UVA. Go Hoos.
I agree with you. It's definitely the epitome of a team because at different points in the tournament, a different player stepped up and helped the team win to get them to that victory. So they embody what it means to be a team. Everybody on the team played well. They all played as a collective group with great coaching. So shout out to them. I want to see who all comes back next year to see if they can carry it one more year. I know Hunter's Jerome has potential draft stock as well. So it'll be interesting to see if they can continue on with this success next year.
Yes, I mean, just all around amazing team. And also, I love them from behind the arc. I think they were a team that's been pretty consistent behind the arc. That just tells you they have true shooters. And, hey, shooters shoot, and now the shooters won. So, again, congrats to UVA. And now, of course, we also have to give love to the women's tournament, which was also, Ray, a great game. Did you get a chance to catch the women's hoop?
Yeah, I caught a couple of the highlights. Baylor fought a tough game, and they faced some adversity early on. But they were able to push through like they always do and take it to the championship and pull it off in the last couple minutes of the game.
I mean, that game came down to the wire. And I feel like all of the last women's championships, they've been that good. So why people don't watch sometimes, I don't get it. Because if you want great basketball, you need to be watching. But as you said, the Baylor Lady Bears, they escaped with a victory, 82-81, over the defending national champions, Notre Dame, who, of course, they were trying to get back to that championship category. But now the Bears win their third national championship and their first championship in 7 years. So you can say they were due for the title win. The game was fantastic. One of my favorite parts is that the best player for the Baylor Bears actually also came from the DMV area. Ray, we were just continuing to show out in all this tournament. But Chloe Jackson, of course, I think is a name that got onto the national spotlight because, wow, she had a course of team high 26 points. And Ray, she started the game 5-for-5. So she had the hot hand. And surprisingly, she didn't miss a shot till there were 7 minutes and 44 seconds that remained in the second quarter. But that being said, Baylor all around was clutch. And even when their star forward, Lauren Cox, went down to the floor and had to be wheelchaired off to the locker room, the team rallied behind and stayed together. And even though that game came close, they had their composure. And at the end, they got the win. So congrats to them. But also hats off to Notre Dame for a great season. And also, that was a great game. So all around, we had some good basketball this March and April. I love the Dame.
This is a great tournament. It was good to see the teams, like not a lot of blowouts. It was a lot of close games on both on the men's and women's side. Just to see the teams fight so hard and blood, sweat, and tears. And this is what you want to see. You want to see that passion. And March is the greatest time of the year, basically, for basketball.
Right. Well said. Well said. I'm already counting down to next March. We got to start the calendar. With that being said, staying in the basketball world, Ray, this was one that shocked so many. I was actually at the Wizards' last game against the Celtics here in D.C. when I got the news. And I'm sure you remember exactly where you are because you probably were so surprised. But Magic Johnson, Ray, calling it quits with the Lakers organization. I don't think I need to say much more than that for the intro. Ray, give me your thoughts. Do you agree with this decision?
I'm going to be honest, I was in shock. As soon as I got the alert on my phone, I said, wait a minute, what's going on? Turned the TV to the channel. I know he was doing a live press conference, and I was just in shock. He seemed like he was really emotional at the moment. I kind of feel like it was, I guess he didn't really plan it out. It was kind of spur of the moment. He just had a feeling at that time, and he went with it. I'm hoping he doesn't regret it, because it definitely seemed like he was very emotional. He didn't even tell Jeannie Buss about his decision. He just went ahead and announced it on live air, basically, during that press conference. So I'm curious to see where the Lakers go from here, because I feel as though LeBron's main reason for going there was because of Magic Johnson. Now the team is definitely going to be in shambles next season. I'm curious to see where it goes. Luke Walton's, his job is still up in the air. It's a lot of decisions need to be made, and with nobody at the top to make these decisions outside of Jeannie Buss. So it's going to be a very interesting summer for the Lakers fans.
To say the least, like you said, I mean, what's next? You're right. I mean, Magic at the helm and LeBron going there. But as you said, it seems like now we're all asking those questions. It was very surprising. Now, the reasoning I can understand, Magic has a lot going on. But at the same time, what he means to that franchise, what he means to LA, what he means to those players to have him in the front office, it was just really surprising. And especially since he talked about Jeannie Buss, but he didn't even tell her. So talk about impromptu. I mean, she even had to tweet about it when she found out about it, because, of course, everybody then started asking her questions. And I thought she did it in true style. Of course, she said she loved working side by side with Johnson. But that being said, Ray, as you said, I just have a lot of questions for this Lakers organization after the season that they had this year. And, of course, with all of the different talk for next season, a lot of people aren't talking about who the Lakers are going to get. Of course, we're talking about who the Knicks are going to get and many other teams. But that being said, what is next for LeBron? What can the Lakers do, and how do they get their fans back, and how do they get to that Lakers organization that we knew of late of being that dominant team in the West? I think a lot of questions are up in the air, and I don't know. Somebody asked me this, Ray, the other day, and we'll get your thoughts on it. I mean, at the end of the day, when we look back at this moment and Magic's career, how would you categorize his time with the Los Angeles Lakers?
I mean, this obviously has to be separated from his playing time. This is a different chapter in his life. But as of right now, especially the way he stepped away, this might be considered a failure. It seems like he definitely didn't achieve what he wanted to achieve. The Lakers still have not made the playoffs. And it doesn't really seem like things turned around much at all either. Draft position, they have a lot of young players that are definitely potentially going to be some stars, but they're also trying to move a lot of those players. So it's a lot in flux right now. I'm really curious to see what they're going to do this summer, because honestly, I don't believe that any of the top free agents are going to go there, at least not the top tier. You got the 4Ks, you got Kyrie, Kevin Durant, Kemba Walker, and Kawhi Leonard.
Right.
I think any four of those are going. And then last year, of course, Paul George spurned them. So outside of those four that are going this year, you have, Jimmy Butler and DeMarcus Cousins. Those may not be the marquee guys that you were looking for, but it's a lot. A lot to be expected and determined, and see what's going to happen this offseason. There's going to be some trouble.
To say the least, and I agree with you 100%. Like you said, the offseason, I don't know really. I don't think many were looking at the Lakers beforehand, but now that this has all happened, I mean, I'm squinting towards the Lakers organization, or I have my shades on and not looking at all, because, as you said, they're up in influx. And nobody knows what's next. And who wants to go to an organization where you just don't know the next step, and where, I mean, you don't know the leadership. And I know Magic, there was a lot of stuff going on this year. And as you said, I mean, I think a lot of the stuff that was going on with the tampering and, of course, Luke Walton's situation and so much. But crazy enough, I mean, Ray, did you think that Luke Walton would actually outlast Magic Johnson? I mean, who thought that as the season began to end? But that being said, I don't know where I put this. I don't think it was a success for Magic. It wasn't a complete failure, but this season I know Lakers fans are going to be happy and quick to forget, but we'll have to stay tuned for what's next. All right, Ray, as we said, lots happening in the basketball world, and Lakers fans, I'm sorry, Ray, and I can't bring you better news, but basketball fans, the end of eras with the two Ds. We had K's before, but now, of course, Dwayne Wade and Dirk hanging it up, right? I'm not ready yet. I don't think the game's ready. They did so much for basketball, but I'll let you go first. What tribute, if you could talk to both of them right now, give me your tribute that you would say to them for what they've done for the game and overall the NBA organization.
Well, first, let's touch on Dirk. I feel like he's had a huge impact on the NBA. He created the stretch four. Before him, there were no big men, seven-footers shooting three-pointers, stretching the court like this. Dirk pretty much revolutionized the game. He's definitely going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's going down as one of the all-time great power forwards, one of the top scorers of all time as well. I would definitely put him up there as being the best foreign player in the league of all time. It'll be between him and Hakeem Olajuwon. But Dirk, his versatility on the court, his ability, he was never the most athletic player, but he was always going to give you a bucket. And everyone knew where he was going to be on the court. He was going to be at that elbow. But it didn't matter. You couldn't stop his shot from going in. That one-legged fadeaway was unbeatable. It was only comparison to the Kareem's jump hook. So kudos, shout out to Dirk. Dirk's a great player.
I'm not ready, Ray, because like you said, he is a great player. You talked about some of his signature moves and his signature spot on the court. But 21 years, Ray, 21 years he gave us. I wish he would give us a couple more. I know I'm being selfish. But that's it. He changed the game. And as you said, for a foreign player, I think he put a new standard of it. And I'm going to call it the Dirk standard. And like you said, I mean, he was able to come in, make an impact, and do it for a long time. And let me tell you, Dirk was no one easy to guard or defend. When he took control of the game, he could take control of the game. And his legacy is long-lasting. So, Dirk, thanks for all you do. Now, I can't see what's next for him. Do you think he's going to stay around the game of basketball, right?
I definitely think he's going to get some type of front office position with the Mavs, whether it be a shooting coach.
Right. It would only be right.
Yeah, whether it be a shooting coach or something of that sort, I definitely could see him in player development. Even this year alone, it seems like he's been working with Doncic already and trying to get him to improve. And I know early on in the season they said he was working with DeAndre Jordan to get his free throws shooting down back, and he had a great increase with that. So he's definitely going to be involved some way, whether it be in the front office or more player development. But he's definitely got to be a legend. They need a statue out in front of that stadium for him, though. That's for sure.
For sure, for sure. And I hope fans pressure them to do it if the organization's not already thinking about it. And honestly, I think DeMarcus Cousins said it best. He said one of the most gifted players to ever come into this league. And that's obviously high accolades from a fellow NBA player. But like you, I think he's going to stay around the game. Of course, the Mavs organization would be perfect, and I don't think you can let him go. But I'm excited to see what's next for him. I think he's going to have a new legacy and whatever he does next. And, of course, now, Ray, one last dance. Dwayne Wade hanging it up. Give me your thoughts on the legacy that D. Wade has left for the game of basketball.
And D. Wade himself, he's a pioneer as well. He's one of the originators of the Big Three / Super Teams. No star players were joining up the way they are now. Basically, they made their own legacy, and a lot of players have followed behind them. D-Wade was definitely top three shooting guards of all time. I got Kobe and Jordan, the only two ahead of him. Whether it be on the offensive side or the defensive side, he was a great two-way player. He initially started his game out as a slasher, developed a jump shot, developed a little bit of a post game, and he always gave you some trouble on the defensive side. So D-Wade is definitely all-time great as well. He's definitely a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I just kind of wanted to chime in on that thing that Paul Pierce was saying about he was a better player. I think Paul Pierce might have been feeling himself that night. It was a little disrespectful.
Jalen must humble him, too.
I mean, I understand if somebody asks you who's better, you're going to say yourself, but I think he went a little overboard. He some of the things he said, even still, you got to go to D-Wade. D-Wade was always a better defender than him, and he was pretty much equivalent scorer as well. D-Wade, first ballot Hall of Famer, respect to D-Wade. Wade County, they got a whole city named after him now. The whole county
yes.
named after him now.
Yes, and they're still trying to do more to honor him. That's how you know you've left a legacy. Former President Obama tweeted about your legacy. I mean, there's not much more to say. You know you've made an impact in sports. And then, Ray, I just think about the countless players that come into the league and say Dwayne Wade is their favorite player. I mean, just think about that. He's inspired a whole nother generation. He's changed the game. Everything he touches is golden. And I think on and off the court, Dwayne Wade has just been a spectacular person and player. I mean, just think about it. 3 championships, 16 years he gave us. I'm like him with Eric. I wish we continue to see him play. But Dwayne, I mean, as you said, one of the greatest to ever do it. You talked about the super team thing. He left an impact that none of us will soon ever forget. And like you said, I cannot wait to see him go into the Hall of Fame. And actually, you know what? And speaking of what he might do after, I would love to see him in the broadcast booth. I really think Wade is good with his words, and I think he'd just be smooth. And I'm already calling for it. I'm calling him to be part of that great NBA TNT team. What do you think, Ray? What's life after basketball for Dwayne Wade?
Honestly, I think right now he's going to focus more on his family. You know, they just had a new baby, but I think he's really going to be pushing for his son to get into the league. I think that's part of the reason why he kind of fell back a little bit. You know, they had the baby via surrogate, so they kind of planned it all out. Because if you watch D Wade now, he actually can probably play another couple years.
That's the crazy thing, yeah.
Yeah, versus Dirk. Dirk was kind of like moving around real slow. You can kind of tell Dirk was on his last leg, but D Wade probably had another 2 or 3 years in him of still being a productive player. Maybe not at an all star caliber, but still giving you at least 15 to 20 points a game for at least another 2 years. So I think right now he's really going to focus on his son, get his son prepared and ready, because his son's a pretty good basketball player as well. And I think he's going to make a push for his son to get into the league now. He's going to go on to develop.
I was just going to say, I feel like it's not fair. I mean, it seems like everybody's sons are just spectacular at playing basketball. We got Wade's son. We got LeBron's son. Like, I don't know. It seems like the genes continue to rub off. But that's a good point. I think he is very more family-oriented. You can see all of his and Gabby's pictures. And like you said, he's a new dad now. So I think Gabby will love having him home more. I think his kids will love him. As you said, now he can really focus on his son's career and kind of making that next generation of Wade in the NBA. So I'm excited for that. But real quick, right, because it was trending, and I know this is kind of impromptu, but Wade also made headlines because a picture surfaced. And I mean, his family was happy, but his son Zion Wade actually attended the LGBTQ Pride Parade down in South Beach in Miami. And of course, the parade celebrated the LGBTQ plus community. His son's 11 years old. And there was a lot of comments, both in support Ray and both those against. So that being said, I mean, just kind of give me your thoughts overall on just kind of this culture, I guess, now that athletes are kind of raising their kids in. And how do you think they are supposed to react to things like this? And how, as society, you know, can we get better, hopefully, in handling situations like this?
Well, I mean, to him, to Dwayne and Gabrielle, I'm very happy that they supported their son or his son and what he wanted to do as far as going to the parade and feeling like that was part of his lifestyle. So that's what you're supposed to do as a parent. You're supposed to be supportive in whatever your children want to do. And I don't, for all the people that are saying bad things about him, that's his kid. You got to let him raise him the way he feels suitable for him and how he wants to run his household. So I have nothing negative to say about that at all, honestly. I just want to say congratulations to him and keep supporting his son.
I loved it. I love seeing Gabby and Dwayne Wade supported. I think having influential people like them will hopefully help to change culture, even though it should already be changed. People with 2019, people can love who they love. People can be who they want. And this is a child. First of all, for you to degrade a child, I have to ask, what's going on in your life, right? To me, kids are off limit. That's just a personal thing that I have. But I love seeing that Wade was super proud and put it up there. And he didn't care about what the haters were saying. But it was just beautiful to see. And I just love how his family's kind of come full circle. And I feel like Dwayne and Gabby right now, they're kind of come that example family. And it's just beautiful Black love. We need to spread more positivity, Ray, I think, in the world. So haters are going to hate, but all you can do is continue to spread love. That's just my thoughts on that. But it was great seeing that. So shout out to you, Zion. All right, that being said, Ray, it's now time for my Woman Crush Everyday segment, where the WNBA draft. Ray, I can't believe it's that time again. But that gets me excited because that means the WNBA season is getting closer. And we'll kick it off, Ray, with the number one pick overall in the WNBA draft. The Las Vegas Aces selected Jackie Young for Notre Dame women's basketball. And, of course, you're just talking about Notre Dame briefly and that championship loss to the Baylor Bears. That was pretty exciting. And I think another name that everyone kind of was following is the number four pick, Katie Lou Samuelson, which UConn fans, you guys know her name very well. She was selected by the Chicago Sky. So excited to see what she will do. And Tierra McCowan, she is going to the Indiana Fever. Of course, she is from Mississippi State women's basketball team. And who could forget their incredible championship run a couple years ago? So that being said, Ray, WNBA draft, any players that you have your eye on?
I mean, honestly, Young is very good. She's definitely one of the more talented players in the draft. I'm excited to see what she can do when she gets in the WNBA. But I'm really more astonished by the fact that Notre Dame had five players go in the draft. The WNBA draft is not as long as the NBA draft. So in the first round alone, they had a total of three players, and it's only 12 picks. So 3 out of 12 picks were from Notre Dame. So that's kind of wild to me. That alone is a crazy stat. And then, like I said, they had two more players in the second round. So it's just crazy to me that they had that many players go to the league, basically. But I'm really excited. I want to see Jackie Young play. I really think she's going to do well in the league. And I want to see how her future pans out.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. WNBA draft, as you said, a lot of great players in Notre Dame. Geez, might as well have told the coach we're going to take your whole team. But that just tells you how much talent that Notre Dame team had. And I think Notre Dame kind of got into, I'll say, the mainstream spotlight with, of course, Skylar Diggins, even though they were a great team before that, but I think she got to help put them in the mainstream. And now it just seems like Notre Dame continues to put out these amazing players that do well in the WNBA and, of course, in college. They pretty much have a factory. I'm just going to call it that. Notre Dame women's basketball. I'm telling you, ladies, you want to get to WNBA, that is not a bad place to play. The coach knows what she's doing, and they continue to be in the competition. They continue to be in that conversation when we talk about championships. So congrats to all of the ladies getting drafted in this year's WNBA draft. I cannot wait to cover you all in the WNBA. And right, I can't believe it, but that will do it for this show. Thanks again to our very special guest, Tony Bellew, for joining us right here on Listen In with KNN. As always, it's me, your host Nicole Nelson, and the one and only Ray Jones. I hope you had fun, learned something, and of course, jumped in on the KNN bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at FoxSports1340AM.com. If that's not enough, the show is also available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support truly do matter. Until next week, enjoy the sports world. Smile, please, people. And don't take your fantasy sports too seriously, because there's always another play. Thanks for listening.
Follow Kelsey on Twitter at @TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN. AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio.